Card presents Back Issue Bloodbath with your hosts, Andrew Young and Petula Neal.
Some folks want the quiet life, you know, something easy, something simple. But to others, that's boring. That's just way too damn boring. Gotta become a star. Welcome to Back Issue Bloodbath. I'm Andrew Young.
I'm Petula Neal.
And this week we are looking at a comic that popped up on a lot of best comics and favorite comics lists of the past year. Fire and Ice, Welcome to Smallville, written by Joanne Starr with artwork by Natasha Bustos and colors by what I think is the coolest surname ever. She's Tamara Bonvillain, which sounds like Bond villain.
So, absolutely.
So that's cool.
You know what? It's weird. I read it as Bonvillain, but I prefer
it
your
could
reading.
Be Bonvillain, Bonvillain. Yeah. I don't know. I just like the name, definitely. But yes, it's the classic characters of Fire and Ice, who, let's face it, have always been seen as C-listers in the DC universe. And in this, they've kind of been relegated to staying in Smallville because Superman was like, hey, you guys kind of really screwed up. So maybe you should take a load off and like rethink, reevaluate. Why don't you go to Smallville and hang out with my mom? And of course, they get to Smallville and Fire's like, we're not hanging out with his mom. To hell with this. I've rented us a place. It used to be an old salon. And somehow they end up opening said salon. And somehow that salon ends up becoming a second chance for villains trying to reform. But really, it's an attempt at creating a reality show through social media. It's everything. There's a lot of stuff happening in this series, but really when it boils down to it, it's a story about deep-rooted friendship, how it can be the best thing in your life, and sometimes how it can be the worst thing in your life, and sometimes it can be at the same time both those things are happening. So Petula, what did you think so far of the series? We've read the first four issues.
I'm going to say that this really feels very dated to now.
Okay.
In the whole confluence of the reality show and the, you know, Fire basically deciding, I'm going to take my middling notoriety and try to create a recurring revenue content creator gig out of this. And that's interesting. There's certain stories that we read that very much feel very much of a time, but in a timeless way. Like if you think of Darwin doing sort of the kind of old timey pastiche energy, this I'm very curious about what this would feel like if we actually were doing this as a back issue, like 15 years from now. Some of the things that are funny in this now, would these feel weirdly like specific to a very like particular point in time, which isn't bad. Like a lot of comics very much reveal where they're set based on what people are doing, what they're talking about, what their jobs are. But when you do have certain characters that are, regardless of what they're doing, regardless of how they're doing their job, that always feel timeless. Like when Jimmy Olsen comes into a series like this, that's where it really like the friction of that certain comic book characters feel like the same that they felt, you know, 30 years ago that they do now. And then other characters feel like you could not have existed before.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting you say that because Fire and Ice, of course, their big claim to fame is they were part of Justice League International. They were part of the Keith Giffen, JMD Matisse, Kevin Maguire run of Justice League that started in the mid 80s after Crisis on Infinite Earths and went all the way into the mid 90s, morphed a bit into something a bit more traditional in its storytelling. But when Giffen and DeMatteis were on it, it had this kind of three tier storytelling that they told big adventures, but they were doing it with a lot of B and C list characters with a couple of A-listers peppered through every now and then, who were really like almost comedic in nature. They leaned into the action, but they leaned into the comedy as well. But undercutting all of it was the feeling of family and heart. Like it was always like, you can tell that deep down, these people care for each other. And I feel like this book, it has the spirit of that. And because of that, Fire and Ice, you say the whole, this is a story that could already kind of feels dated in the way that it's being presented. For me, I think that's perfect because that's always kind of been Fire and Ice. They've always been something like a little bit of a throwback, even when they first started, sort of thing. And the idea, of course, they've been doing it a long time. And Beatrice, who's, of course, Fire, she actually says there a bunch of times that she's been doing this stuff for a long time, and she just hasn't gotten what she wanted out of it. It's about fame. It's about being in the public eye. It's about being a big fucking hero that everybody loves, sort of thing. And her attempts are like, I want to go to social media. And where is she going? She's going to the places that, you know, old people know about social media, you know, or near defunct social media platforms for this stuff. She has to talk to a younger person to figure out where people's eyes are these days. And I've always felt like Ice is one of those people that's kind of fallen out of a storybook into real life. Like, you could see her in like a Sleeping Beauty or a Cinderella. She's that kind of protagonist where it's like, there's something magical about her. And it takes a lot to get her angry, and she tries to see the good in everyone. And so with that, that always kind of has a dated, timeless kind of feel. So I think the way that it's set up here, putting these two in a small town where one is trying to bring the excitement of the city to this small town, and the other one is trying to find what centers them, I feel like that is the through line the entire way through. And I feel like the storytelling is really strong because of it, because you can throw all these other characters at them, like Rocky Rhodes, or like the villains, or even a very progressive Martha Kent, who's just trying to find the best in life now in her old age. It's like all these things, I think, blend together that they, no matter how many crazy things you're throwing at it, you feel the strength of the friendship between Fire and Ice and how they're going through rough patches. And I also like stories that take a relationship, like, it's, they never do this enough in comics, of focusing on a friend relationship. It's always about a significant other or family. But, you know, there are some people that their strength comes from their best friend. And I feel like this is what we're really exploring here, is that at times things can look like they're like a codependent relationship, but other times it's actually, oh no, we were going through a rough patch. And I feel like that's what we're exploring here.
It also kind of feels weirdly like a series of bets. Here's a run, but you can only use these characters.
Right.
And somehow it kind of weirdly hangs together. The aesthetic is low-key classic Archie in terms of like the color, even the like the salon setup. It's very, it's not full on Pop's Chocolate Shop, but it's sort of in that you can get a lot of people in the frame in one space because it's like very open. You have just the most ridiculous collection of kind of, if we're going to give these ladies C, I don't even know what letter grade of villain we're going to give.
Oh, the villains are Z. They are. Yeah. They're at the bottom.
They're full on Z. And I know this word is overused right now, but as we're speaking of a title that may be very specific to a very particular point in time, I'm going to say unhinged. Once you get sort of past the midpoint of issue 2, I do think you kind of just need to embrace the chaos. The energy of the salon shop and all the different characters, it reminds me of watching round tables now for kind of year-end promotional campaigns for films in award season, because again, this is only the second year that really everybody's doing things in person, because even last year people were still doing like a bit of Zoom and whatever.
Yeah,
but this year people are like in person, so it's a very specific kind of, almost, I'm going to say, Barbie / Mean Girls vibe in terms of what we get in the salon. And also that there's a lot of ladies, like there's still dudes, and part of it could be the creative team. Maybe it's just the leads are Fire and Ice, but it's a very kind of, you know, what do the girls get up to when no one's watching, including Martha being involved? Like, it's very that. The chaos is fun. It's very, I would say, you could read this and read nothing else from DC ever.
Yeah.
Because you don't really need to know who Superman is. Like, he exists sort of outside of the zeitgeist. He's just there.
Yeah. Like, I think everybody has a general idea of who Superman is, even if they don't know the gritty details. Yeah.
Yeah. And everybody else uses their powers in a very obvious way. So even if you are having trouble keeping track of people, and you do get like your kind of page in issue 2 that gives you everyone's names and their powers, you see everyone use their power in a way that, okay, yeah, so this is what this person does. And I get why they're kind of useless, but like, funny.
Well, you bring up the idea of like, you could read this and nothing else. Like, yeah, this is technically a book that you've never read a book before. You could come and read this and get something out of it. And I think one of the keys to that is that they talk to that audience in a way through the character of Tamarind, who has their sole employee at their beauty salon, which is called the Big T's. They hired her basically because she used to work at the salon before it closed down. And she's the only one who really knows how to do anything like working, you know, an actual job type job. And it's her reactions to things where it's like when she first meets Elrond, the robot from space. Fire is just very like matter of fact, like, no, he's a robot from space. And so Tamara just has to go, okay, whatever. And so with that, the audience follows suit and goes, okay, that's all I really need to know about that guy. Got it, you know? And I think that's the key. Like, they've done a really good job of putting her in as the voice of the audience. So, like, any moment that a reader might go, what the fuck is that? She'll go, what the fuck is that? You know? While at the same time giving her a distinct character. Because you can easily make that character not have any real character to them. They could just be there to ask those questions. But, like, she's already got a, you know, a little mini arc going on right now with the character of Honey. And there's also the fact that she tends to break out into song when she's annoyed about stuff and sings about her problem. And then there's also the fact that she is the only one who actually knows how to do anything. And that's brought up quite a bit. So what I like is they really focus on all of their characters. Nobody is there as just a warm body. The Rhodes brother and sister. Rocky Rhodes, when she was first introduced, was kind of like, oh, okay, she's just going to be a character who works at the diner. But now it's like, no, she's kind of falling into single white female kind of territories. And then you've got her brother, Charlie, who is, you know, at first it seemed like he was going to be like just a himbo, but now it seems like he's kind of somebody that really is kind of having feelings for Fire, wants to see her get her dreams of getting out of this Fleabag town. Cause you can see the, like, he handles it well. But you can see he's a little hurt when he thinks about, oh, crap, she's gone off having sex with Lobo, you know?
But who wouldn't? I mean, Lobo. It's just... I'm not saying, but I'm saying it's just...
I get it.
If you could.
But these first four issues, I only picked the first four issues because that's all that's come out. But it's amazing that where the series begins, because the series begins with the Big T's is on fire. What the hell's going on? And then we go back a few days. And now at the end of issue 4, it's come back around to that moment. And that moment is actually a mystery. And there's several people who could have set fire to the Big T's. So you got a little bit of that in there too.
Oh yeah. The whole book is very meme friendly again, making it very much of the now. Like, even the coming back, it's like, you know, you may wonder how we got here.
Yeah.
The character intro, the splashes of the villains, I feel like they're all memes, and I only got a few of them. Like, definitely there's like a Salt Bae, there's different characters that are representing different sort of the zeitgeist things. But then there's also like in your face, like, you would get this if you've ever been on the internet stuff. But then there's just like good kind of subliminal, if you're not the kind of person who notices it, or if you do notice those things, like when we're in a whole page that's more fire focused, the whole color story is very complementary to her look, especially like the color of her skin is sort of like the base palette, like kind of like a soft red, yellow will permeate everything. And then when you're in a set of panels that's more ice focused, like when they're separated, then you get like the sky blues and the whites, and it's like very like crispy, sunny, bright. Like they're using all of the tools to sort of help you move through what could be a very chaotic story so that your brain is adjusting. And they're giving you the visual cues to do that. And then when you're in a section that involves everyone, it is very a lot. So when you're in the salon and all the characters are there together, it's a blending of both of their color palettes, but it's almost like tempered to allow the styling of the different villains to pop. And there's a couple of areas where Ice is like out of her street clothes. And again, this looks like an outfit that someone styled on Instagram that I would follow. Like,
right.
Like it's just a very cute outfit. It's like all like the purse, the like top, the way it's tied. It's like, oh no, that shirt didn't come like that. You styled this. There's so much like thought in big and small ways into the visuals of this.
Oh yeah.
So well, like on the surface, it would come off like being like, oh, this is a very kind of simple style, but it is like there's a lot going on.
Well, that's the thing. Natasha Bustos, of course, she's known for her work on Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, which is such a cute, fun book. It's like, you know, you pick that up, you just have a good time, good stories. Of course, that's for a younger audience. This, the way it's written, the way the characters are, this is written for an older audience. And it's fun to see her take that style that many people are used to seeing her do for a younger story and bring it to this adult type story. And it kind of brings it like it's an extra, there's an excitement to it. Because it's like with this type of story, traditionally, you get a very detailed, almost subdued look to it because they're trying to go for and a combination of like grounded realism meets fantastical mayhem sort of thing. And so you can get a much more, like, people would go a bit too, like, if this came out 20 years ago, people would go too crazy with the amount of lines they would use to draw this. Whereas this, drawing it as this kind of, like, you know, trim, like, as you said, like, the, you know, it's a stylized look. It's not too busy. Because of that, I feel like it's just got energy coming off of it. It's like you turn the page and it feels like it's popping out at you.
Absolutely. There was a lot of me because I got digitals for this. I'm just going back and forth. Like, what happened? What's going on? It is very hard to keep track of names. Like, it's harder than, you know, first
episode. There's a lot of characters. Yeah. Yeah. There's
a lot of characters.
I'd say there's almost 20 characters in this book. It feels like it. Yeah. And it's only been 4 issues. So,
yeah. I will say the moment that sticks with me the most as like an egregious assault is the haircut.
Oh, Charlie's haircut?
Oh my God.
Well, look how cool he was about it. He was not upset about it. That's what I was surprised at.
Yeah. I mean, I guess because he's also an internet thirst trap. So he would probably look at it as like a great kind of before and after.
Oh, yeah. Content. Kind of, right. Yeah.
Exactly. He could, on his own streams, just do a, you know, show up with his head like that, or even do like a reveal, like do baseball cap and a hoodie. And you're probably wondering, he could do his own. How did I get here? Yeah.
Oh man. I do love the attempts to keep continuity when they no longer can do their quote unquote reality show at the Big T's and fire moves them all to the cave. They still put a toilet in the spot where they're going to do confessionals because the confessional was the bathroom.
It makes total sense.
And I'm sitting there, I'm reading it going, okay, yeah, yeah, I get why they're doing it, but how come none of them is calling it out? And then somebody's like, why is there a toilet here? And somebody's like, continuity.
Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen later on. Like, yeah, you're streaming this, but you could, you know, reuse this footage later in post. You could just throw up the wall in the salon app behind the toilet.
There you go.
Yeah, it's great. And just like a good framing device. Like, and more hideout caves should have toilets. I'm assuming they didn't actually hook up plumbing to it, but not a bad idea.
There you go. When it comes to Fire and Ice, though, Do you think they're on the road to recovery as friends, or do you think now that it's tipped back the other way too far and we may be seeing like a number of issues before they can make it work as Fire and Ice?
I think they need to both discuss their objectives and see if those objectives can align. If I was a recruiter, I would not put them together as a team.
Hmm.
They definitely seem to be kind of cross purposes. So it's not to say that they can't work together, live together, try to make this whole little small town social gig work. But in a way, what they do with the colors and some of those panels when they're separate, that's how they're operating. It's like two different books.
Mm.
Yeah.
I felt that they were almost at a breakthrough before Rocky Road showed up at the drag show. It looked like they were on the right path. They were actually talking, and then Rocky showed up and got it between them, and then things turned bad again.
Yeah. I mean, and again, people protesting outside a drag show. Like, how so now, coded?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Very specifically.
Well,
now
the character
coded.
Miss Congeniality, she's very much a picture of the alt-right circa this time. So, yeah. But the other thing is, though, is that there's another mystery going on that is kind of bubbling in the background. And it's kind of surprising that neither Fire nor Ice has followed up on it yet. And that is, there is a strange hunger that has come over some of Smallville. It starts with strange reactions of a herd of cows that starts eating each other. Then, when they're trying to show to Jimmy Olsen that the salon is working great, that the Big Tease is a great place to reform villains, Lot's wife takes a big hunk of beef out of Beef Eater. And then the one that they do almost subtly is that when Fire and Ice have their big fight outside the drag show and Fire punches Miss Congeniality, where Miss Congeniality is in the just one panel, it's one quick panel, when she's being recovered by her fellow protesters in the alleyway, they start to bite into her legs. Ice has kind of an idea of what this might be, but she hasn't done any follow-up on it. How do you feel about that? Because that's the one thing I was just sort of like, oh, you guys just, the two of you, like the story hasn't forgotten about this thing, but the two of you have just clean, you know, you've been told this is a problem. Neither one of you have gone to check it out yet.
Also, the feeling of hunger, and I, in any cartoon, comic book kind of thing, when somebody is, when burgers are involved, I'm instantly salivating. I love meat, listener. When they're doing their sort of montage, getting like the, you know, Z-list goons together, and I forget the name of the alien looking guy who works at a burger shop.
Oh, Ambush Bug.
Ambush Bug, yeah. I just got very hungry. So they sort of seed in this kind of looming hunger. But yeah, you're right. They don't really deal with it. There's a lot of things going on that I feel like as this series goes on, they could either solve or not. Like, just leave and have things happen randomly for no reason. Like, why does Jimmy Olsen of all people show up? Like, we get the why. Like, we get a why, but like, really? We're getting like an A-list sidekick in this, like, you know, all the other letters after L.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Lois Lane is now the editor-in-chief at the Daily Planet right now. And so I could totally see Lois going, Jimmy, just go find out whatever this, they keep bugging me, find out what this is, see if there's a story sort of thing. Cause that's the thing. I feel like Lois is very much like, is it a stupid, weird story? Send Jimmy. That's basically it.
Yeah. But yes, that Beef Eater gets eaten also just from a wordplay POV. Yep. Delicious. And I think at that point in the story, when I saw her literally like smacking her lips over remains, I didn't even flinch. I didn't even like gasp. Again, the only thing that really made me gasp was the haircut to the hawk. Like the sort of midpoint of the haircut where they're like, we're still working, when it was just like, yeah, a horrible mess.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like Beef Eater parts. I was like, yeah, okay, sure. That's fine.
All right, so overall, do you think it's a book that people should be checking out?
I think that it requires a specific sensibility. I wouldn't recommend this to everyone, but I definitely would recommend this to like my 15, 16 year old movie friend. Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah. I would also recommend it to anybody who was a fan of the old Giffen, DeMatteis, Kim McGuire stuff, because it's the same kind of mentality. If you go back and read those, they have the same kind of energy and pacing as this book. And also just kind of like the crazy hijinks of like, it can be one book on one page and a totally different book on the next. So yeah, I definitely understand why it made a lot of people's best of and favorite lists for 2023, because it is a fun time.
And the weird energy of random characters also kind of reminds me of what I like about Hitman.
There you go. There you go. Another DC book that dealt with a lot of C-list heroes. So there you go. Oh, yeah. So definitely, I think you should check it out as well. I think it's a fun book. It's 4 issues have come out so far. And can't wait to see where it goes. Looking forward to see the two mysteries of what's happening with the hunger and who burnt down the salon. These mysteries and more await you in Fire and Ice Welcome to Smallville. Well, we've come to the end of this week's episode of Back Issue Bloodbath. Petula, where can the good people find you?
At initiative.com, on some social things, at obesacantavit, obesacantavit, and here with you.
Of course, you can find everything I do over at geekardshow.com. Follow me on Twitter at GeekHard. Follow me on Instagram at Andrew_of_geek_hard. Of course, you can follow this very show on Facebook at Back Issue Bloodbath, where we post a new episode every week. But the easiest way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe to us on your podcasting platform of choice. While you're there, leave a 5-star rating and review. And then after that, sit back and enjoy. And then why not tell some people about us? It'd be fun. You know, just share the love. That's what I say. It's all about sharing the love. 2024 is all about sharing the love. That's the Back Issue Bloodbath motto now. This has been Back Issue Bloodbath. I've been Andrew Young.
I'm Antonio.
Have yourself a good one.